Greetings. I'm Bill Kladke, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Dr. Seema Iyer, who is Associate Director of the Jacob France Institute and Research Associate Professor at the University of Baltimore. And Dr. Iyer is here today to talk to us about the various things that the Institute and UB do to understand Baltimore and to work to make Baltimore better. So, Dr. Iyer, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you so much for your time. You folks are doing so much, and it's wonderful that you have the level of expertise that is helpful and that hopefully will continue to make a difference in the way Baltimoreans live. First of all, for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar, could you tell us a little bit about the Jacob France Institute?
Sure. Thanks so much again. And it is probably not the first place people think of to actually get good information about Baltimore, but maybe after listening to this conversation, it will become people's go-to spot for learning more about Baltimore's neighborhoods. So again, thanks for the invitation to be here. So the Jacob France Institute is in the Merrick School of Business at the University of Baltimore. So we're actually in the business school. And for many years, the Jacob France Institute has been collecting what's called administrative data, so data that city, state agencies, sometimes federal agencies have been collecting across different, you know, agencies. So the Department of Labor collects data, and the Department of Commerce collects data, and Department of Housing and different agencies have been collecting data, and the question was, how do we use all these data integrated in a way that actually helps with policy implications and helps people understand about where they live, in particular neighborhoods? So in 1999-2000, the city created, not the city government, but city funders, city nonprofits came together to create what's called the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance to kind of harness all this data that was now being collected by city agencies and integrate it in a way that communities would have access to it. So every time we pulled a permit to bump out our kitchen or redo a bathroom, that is a signal that somebody is investing in your neighborhood. And, of course, to pull a permit, you have to do that because that's the law and that you should actually make sure that the work is being done in a way that complies with building regulations. But so you have to do it for an administrative purpose. That's why it's called administrative data. But what it actually signals is that, you know, when you see clustering of people investing or a gap in people investing, you know, no permits being pulled in certain parts of the city, that's a sign that there is no investment. And the fact that we can think about these data in that way became more and more obvious after, you know, 2000, 2001. And then the city of Baltimore was the first city in the nation to have a 311 system, which where people call 311 to get services in their neighborhood. And that becomes just a huge treasure trove of data about what people care about in their neighborhood, right? Yeah. The pothole needs to be fixed, or there's trash in my alley, or, you know, I saw some brown water in the stream down the street. These are literally little sensors that people were calling about. And so we now have a whole wealth of data, and the question is who's actually analyzing it. And the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance was created to do just that. So we've been issuing what's called the Vital Signs Report every year. We have about 100 different indicators. We take all kinds of data from different city agencies, from the police department, from the school system, from the housing department, from the 311 system, and put out basically a battery of indicators. What's the crime rate in your neighborhood? How many homes were sold? What's the price of those sold? How many kids go to the public school system in your neighborhood? And it's a very comprehensive set of indicators now that communities can track every year, hopefully like clockwork. You can set your clock to us. We've been doing it now for 20 years, putting out the vital signs data for all of our neighborhoods.
That's great. That's great. And I know that that can be used for a lot of different things. What are your roles and work at the university? You have a couple of titles here.
Yes. So luckily, you know, I have the ability to have what's called an applied research unit. The Baltimore Neighbor Indicators Alliance is what's called a fully self-support unit. So we don't get paid unless people pay us to do analysis and work for the city of Baltimore. And that means that it has to be relevant, right? We are not pie-in-the-sky researchers where we're thinking about, you know, fundamental research, which we need people to do. But what we do is very applied. People need to know, what does this policy mean to a neighborhood right now? Like, what does it mean to have, you know, a living wage for workers in the city? And can we estimate what the impact will be? That will be the kinds of work that we have been doing with the data that we've been collecting. So that's my research hat. And then about 7 years ago, I took on the role of directing the Real Estate and Economic Development Program, which is an undergraduate program at the University of Baltimore. So I'm also a professor. And it's actually been a really nice mix because our students at the University of Baltimore come from Baltimore, from the region. They know a lot about Baltimore, and all of my research is about Baltimore, and we have just fantastic conversations in the classroom about the impact of real estate markets on neighborhoods and vice versa, and it's been a really great experience for me to interact with our students.
Yeah, as well as a real grounded education for those folks that are in that program.
Yes, a lot of people are surprised that I know so much about their neighborhood. and then I show them, like, this is what the data is telling me about your neighborhood. Does that, you know, represent your own experience? And I don't just do that with our students. I obviously do that with the community leaders, with nonprofit organizations that are working in these neighborhoods. And so it is very grounded, it's very ability to kind of truth tell from the data. Is the data actually reflecting people's experience? And 99% of the time it does, because if we think about where the data is coming from, it's because they have interacted with their government for some reason for me to even have the data, right? So it is about, you know, who called 311. It might not be completely true, but it's probably reflective of sentiment in the neighborhood.
Right, exactly. Let's talk about, second here, could you tell us, how can someone find out more information about the Institute and what you do there?
Sure. We are on all kinds of social media. We're on Twitter and Facebook and newly on Instagram, in case anybody's on social media. Our handle on all three platforms is our acronym, which sounds a little strange, but it's BNIA, which is the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance, and JFI, which is the Jacob Franz Institute. So our handle is just BNIAJFI. And our website is the same thing. It's www.bniajfi.org. So if you can remember those seven letters in a row, you can catch us almost.
Right. Yeah, Bina Jassy, that doesn't really ring, does it? Yeah, but it is distinctive. And that's great. So www.bniajsi.org.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Let's talk about some of your research findings that are directly about Baltimore's racial disparities.
Yeah.
It is a city of disparities, isn't it?
Yes. Unfortunately, our data can tell you that in whatever way you want to hear it, that we are a city of extreme, not just disparities racially, but disparities on almost every indicator, and they're correlated. So one of the things that we have been doing, we were an expert on trying to figure out what an indicator could be, even defining an indicator that's actionable. We want these indicators to be something that you can change over time. You know, you can change how many people in your neighborhood have a library card that's of interest to your neighborhood. You can change, you know, how many kids are in the school system or how many houses are being sold. And so over, you know, the past, since 2000, we had gotten good at putting out good data, hopefully. And when in the city of Baltimore, we obviously had a lot of maybe soul searching after the death of Freddie Gray in 2015, which happened just you know, less than a mile from my office at the University of Baltimore. Sampson Winchester is just a neighboring neighborhood over where he was picked up. And so it was very personally distressing to hear not only what had just happened down the street, but that our data kind of predicted it in some ways. The disparity had just keep getting worse and worse and worse in Sampson Winchester. When you look at our data for that neighborhood in 2000, the number one indicator that we tell people to track is the vacancy rate. So how many homes and buildings in that neighborhood were boarded up, vacant, and abandoned? Because this is a sign of, you know, deferred maintenance, which is a problem for anybody that continues to live there. And vacant and abandoned housing is a sign that people have left, right? Mm-hmm. Population decline. People leave a neighborhood and they don't take their homes with them. So in the year 2000, Sampson Winchester had a 19% vacancy rate, which is bad enough.
Yeah.
And then by 2015, it had a 35% vacancy rate. And our annual data set had just watched that particular indicator creep up and up and up and up. And the question is, what were we as an organization doing about it besides just reporting that fact, right? And so vacancy is one huge disparity. You know, if you live in a neighborhood without any vacancy, you have a different experience than people living in a neighborhood with a huge amount of vacancy. And this goes across racial lines. So I'll give you one data set that we tell, and this obviously impacts almost every other indicator that we care about. So we have two neighborhoods, Coldstream, Montebello, which is on the east side, which you might be familiar with, on the other side of St. Lowe Park, Clifton Park, on St. Lowe Drive. They have 93% African-American, but a 35% vacancy rate. And then on the west side of town and in Howard Park, also 93% African-American, but has about a 5% vacancy rate. And the experience of living in both of those neighborhoods is totally different. The life expectancy that we now report in Howard Park is 76 years, and the life expectancy in Coldstream and Montebello is only 66 years. So if you just looked at race, they look very similar, but if you looked at some of these other indicators, it's a totally different experience based on the nature of what's going on in the neighborhood.
Let me ask you, Dr. Iyer, in light of these disparities, what would you recommend? I mean, what can be done to help?
So we have to get at some kind of a universal message that what can every neighborhood do to make sure that we don't have this situation where some neighborhoods get everything and some neighborhoods get nothing, which is the case we have of this idea of the tale of two Baltimores. So we tell people to just track one thing, which the 2020 census actually helps us do now that it's out. Are people moving into your neighborhood? So like if somebody moves away or if somebody unfortunately passes away, is there anybody behind them to replace and occupy that building? And if not, that means that as people naturally leave a neighborhood, there's no replacement. And that fundamental question is what every neighborhood needs to think about. And then if you're always trying to welcome people into your neighborhood, if every neighborhood was actually doing that and welcome kind of an inclusive set of people, not just one kind of person or one kind of race or one kind of income, imagine if all of our neighborhoods had the capability of doing that. That anybody of any race, income, gender could truly live in any neighborhood in the city of Baltimore. That's the ultimate goal.
Absolutely.
To actually reduce disparity. So no matter who you are, no matter where you live, think about who's moving in, who are you potentially excluding from moving in, and how can you and your neighborhood address that and look at the data and actually track that over time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And one way they can do that is to go to www.bniajsi.org. There's a lot of material on there, a lot of material.
We also have a YouTube channel, so you can watch videos on how to use the data. We do trainings, and we also come to neighborhood organization meetings, so feel free to reach out to us to do that, too.
Wonderful. And to reach out to you would be to go on that website and to submit a contact?
Yep, exactly. There's a contact us form, and we will be happy to reach out.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. Unfortunately, though, Dr. Iyer, that's all we have time for today.
I appreciate all the time that we were able to have.
My pleasure. I thank you. And for Living in Baltimore, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Seema Iyer, who is Associate Director of the Jacob Frantz Institute and Research Associate Professor at the Merritt School of Business for the University of Baltimore, for being our guest today. Thank you so much, Dr. Iyer.
Thank you.
Keep up your good work for all of us. And for Living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.